Well, the old clock on the wall says it's time for Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to be with you. This is all about the music, the arts, the culture we find in abundance in western Wisconsin. Thursday morning, we also replay Spectrum West Friday evening at 7 on the News and Classical Music Network. Today, author Nicholas Butler gets to know Jim Oliver a bit better, and Jim Oliver finds out what makes this award-winning writer tick. Touching on his latest award from the Wisconsin Library Association, Jim also takes us on a tour of theaters and their current productions. In a couple of weeks, the annual Ashley for the Arts event commences in Arcadia, featuring some new configuration to handle anticipated large crowds like they had last year due to showcasing iconic entertainment. We have an inside look at this popular place to be. The band Cranford Hollow, fronted by Eau Claire native John Cranford, returns to Eau Claire while on a national tour. Mr. Cranford shares some phone time with us, and we'll share some tunage with you from their upcoming album. And let's begin with beer. Might be a bit too early for the real thing, but never too late to plan on attending what appears to be an interesting opportunity. It's the Midwest Craft Brewers Conference, coming to UW Stout in a couple weeks. And since I like beer, I knew I'd like to talk with other people with similar taste. One is Jake Woldstead. He likes beer so much, he makes his own. The other person is Anna McCabe, an event organizer involved in professional education programs and services at UW Stout. Why beer? Do you love beer? Is that why this came into your head?
I do love beer. Good. More so, my sister has a love for craft beer, and we've been to a lot of breweries in the area, specifically Minnesota and Wisconsin. But I'm newer to my position at UW Stout as a program manager in professional education programs and services. And so what we do is put on conferences, trainings, workshops, and kind of look for a need in industry. And so I thought, how about craft beer? And UW Stout has a really strong hospitality and tourism and food science, so it was just a really good fit, and the chancellor gave it an okay. And so it started in the early planning stages last fall, reaching out to a lot of home brewers like Jake, brewers like Eric at the Brewing Project, and, you know, Lucette, Mike and Tim, and Lazy Monk, and they've just been really helpful in ideas and planning, and it's just taken off from there.
The closer I get to UW Stout, the more amazed I am. There's so much going on there all the time.
Thank you.
It's wonderful.
Good.
So tell me, what's the definition? I think I know in my head. I don't know that I've ever been told what a craft beer is. What is craft beer?
Well, Tony McGee from Lagunitas is going to be our closing keynote, and that's exactly what his keynote speech is going to be about.
Where's he from?
Lagunitas is originally from California, but they recently opened a large taproom brewery in Chicago.
Okay.
And he's originally from Chicago.
Someone along the... I mean, it started out as home brewing, and then someone came up with the term craft beer. We go to craft fairs. This is what people do with,
Absolutely.
And Jake, you're a home brewer.
That's correct. I've been home brewing for almost 7 years now. I love beer. I enjoy cooking. And really, the brewing process is more similar to cooking than anything else. You cook a dish, and then you feed it to yeast, and they turn wort into beer. It's been a lot of fun. I have family that is allergic to corn, so there are a lot of beers out there that use corn as an adjunct. And even home brews, a lot of the carbonating sugar that people use is corn-based. And since I like my family members, I tend to leave that out of the beers that I make so that they can enjoy them.
What does a person who home brews brew? Something that is similar to everything they've liked on a commercial level all their lives? Do they turn into mad scientists? What do they do?
It usually involves a little bit of both. People start out focusing on the styles of beer that they enjoyed. Originally, I preferred dark beers, and so that's what I brewed for the first couple of years, almost all dark beers. I didn't enjoy hops and some of the more aggressive flavors. As I became more involved in brewing, though, my palate shifted, and now I appreciate hoppy beers and IPAs as well as dark beers. And part of the fun is getting to be a mad scientist a little bit. You can taste something when you're out and you're like, oh, I wonder if this could be incorporated into a good beer. So it gives the opportunity for a great creative outlet as well as just ending up with beer that you enjoy.
I always sit around, maybe with a beer in my hand, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. and wonder what guys like Jacob Leinenkugel back in the 1800s and Augie Pabst and some of those old beer barons think about the state of the beer industry today. Years ago, Hams used to have a line that said, a beer is a beer until you've tasted Hams. It was true. A beer was a beer years ago, and now there are so many different kinds of things. Do you think that the brewers are responding with so many flavors simply because so many people are having so much fun at home?
Absolutely. The rise in home brewers, but also right now the popularity of craft beer in people in general wanting to buy local, more sustainably focused. It's a perfect, you know, niche market for that. And I feel like a lot of craft brewers are trying to be very, you know, experimental and creative and really work on that demographic of people who love that and love, you know, the local beer and something a little bit different and out of the box from what you normally get mm-hmm. at a lot of liquor stores.
And, of course, the coolers in supermarkets mm-hmm. are as long as bowling alleys nowadays. So that makes me believe, and, well, not believe, it's obvious that the beer business is very competitive. Why would someone want to get into the craft beer business when it's so competitive?
I think the reason that people get into the craft beer industry, if they're going to be successful, first, it's got to be because they love beer. A lot of the commercial brewers that I know started out home brewing, came up with a recipe that they enjoyed, then they want to share.
What kind of people are craft brewery people?
Well, I think one could definitely stereotype. Well, and we did do a little bit of that. We were just trying to come up with ideas on, you know, promotion and marketing and how we're trying to appeal to very creative, independent thinkers that appreciate local. And even, I guess I feel like Jake gave me the name of Clark Louis from Toppling Goliath as a potential keynote, and I reached out to them, and they are our opening keynote. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that name says it all. Toppling Goliath in their success as a craft brewer in Decorah, Iowa.
So some of these people, Jake, must be heroes to you.
Oh, definitely. I'm the president of the Menominee Homebrew Club, Lausch Frank, who opened Lazy Monk, I think it's almost 6 years ago now. He was one of the founding members of our club. And so he took his passion for making the beers that he missed from his homeland and made those for himself, and then now is sharing it with the Eau Claire area. I think the passion is what makes people, like myself as homebrewers, look up to people that are working in a commercial brewery, and especially those who take that step of investing their life savings in a dream of opening a brewery. These people definitely are heroes, because if they're making great beer, I mean, that's what it's all about. I get the opportunity to meet a lot of great creative brewers. I have a homebrewing blog at superbrewers.com that I try to share the things that I learn with other homebrewers. It's really just about promoting making great beer, whether it's doing it at home or doing it through a small brewery to actually sell what you make.
We're talking with Anna McCabe and Jake Woldstead. We're talking about the Midwest Craft Brewers Conference. It's August 6th and 7th, and it's at UW Stout. What isn't at UW Stout is my response to that. I see, Anna, there's a full agenda and a quote, an awesome lineup of topics. Like what?
Some of the awesome topics would include starting up a fermentation science program at UW-Madison. So we have Professor Jim Steele to talk about that program, and topics on flavor progressions, building a beer menu for new breweries and tap rooms that are looking to incorporate food, brewing with unique ingredients, trademark, insurance, from great speakers from Baker Tilly and, you know, different law offices coming to talk about the business of craft brewing.
What are you looking to learn from this conference, Jake?
There's a lot of similarities between commercial brewing and home brewing, and a lot of the techniques that the professional brewers use Since they're obviously on a much larger scale, not all of them translate into home brewing, but I'm hoping to learn from some of the experts on recipe development and ways that I can incorporate what they've learned about making great beer into the beers that I make at home. And I will also be speaking about the community that grows up around home brewing, the way that community can be used to help out craft brewers, help around the brewery, help marketing, bringing in people that are already familiar with the process.
It's called the Midwest Craft Brewers Conference. Anna McCabe, how do we get more information at this 11th hour, and it's getting there?
It is.
Someone wants to show up.
Absolutely. Well, you can go to the UW Stout website, uwstout.edu. You can click on conferences, trainings, workshops. That will bring you to the professional education programs and services. Mm-hmm. And the Midwest Craft Brewers Conference is right there. Or you can just Google Midwest Craft Brewers Conference. There are links for registration, and then it will give you information on the schedule, presenters. Right now, we are running a promotion code for a limited time, MCBC. The promotion code MCBC, when they're registering, that can give them 50% off registration. We're just trying to get the word out for anybody who is passionate about craft beer or home brewers, aspiring brewers. Register, promo code MCBC, get 50% off. We would look forward to seeing them on August 6th and 7th.
Sounds like fun to me.
It will be.
Just diving into a big vat of beer.
A dunk tank of beer.
Ah. Jake, you can be the guy. Anna McCabe, Jake Wolstead, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for letting us visit.
Again, it's tough to quickly jot down what someone on the radio is tossing out at you, so just Google Midwest Craft Brewers Conference. You'll find links to registration, and you can get that special 50% off deal by entering promo code MCBC. It's August 6th and 7th. That's a Thursday, Friday at UW Stout, where so many things happen. Coming up, author Nicholas Butler, musician John Cranford, and a look at this year's Ashley for the Arts. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona. The MMAM presents 10 exhibitions per year and has masterpieces by Turner, Constable, O'Keefe, and many more. Visit and support information at mmam.org. Here's a Spectrum memo. The Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center features a high school art exhibit through July 31st. Their website is eauclairearts.com. Tonight, Thursday, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire features Licio, Equinox Jazz Group, and Dan Azur, 6:30 p.m. Well, Jim Oliver's here. He welcomes back an author who's getting more signs of approval from people reading his books and looking forward to more. Here's Jim.
Nicholas Butler was born in Allentown, Pennsylvania, raised in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and educated at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the University of Iowa's Writers' Workshop. He is the author of the internationally best-selling novel Shotgun Love Songs and a collection of short stories entitled Beneath the Bonfire. He lives on 16 acres of land south of Eau Claire, adjacent to a buffalo farm. He is married and has two children. The Literary Awards Committee of the Wisconsin Library Association has chosen Shotgun Love Songs as a literary award winner for 2015. The award is for the highest literary achievement by a Wisconsin author for a work written in 2014. Nicholas Butler joins us to talk about his writing, his books, and what may be on the horizon. So welcome back to Spectrum West.
I'm always happy to be here.
Well, you previously published a number of short stories. What spurred you to write a novel?
In truth, I don't think I initially realized I was writing a novel. I kind of had to trick myself into doing it. I thought that Shotgun Love Songs was going to be a collection of linked novellas in the tradition of a book that I'm very fond of called The New Valley by Josh Wheel. And it was only after having friends and peers look at it and getting a little bit attached to the characters that I just kept writing. And eventually, you know, you get enough pages and a narrative arc and it sort of becomes a novel. But I never intended to do that. I had a really hard time understanding how anyone could write a novel. To me, it was a bit like building a bridge or open heart surgery or completing a marathon. I just didn't understand how it was possible.
Once upon a time, a reporter I worked with interviewed a children's author who had made an appearance at a school in the area where I lived. And one of the questions he asked him was, what do you like most about having written a book? And he said, having it finished. How does that fit in with your situation?
No, I think that's pretty good sentiment. I feel extremely privileged to be a full-time writer, other than being like a backup quarterback for the Packers or a bullpen catcher for the Brewers. I'm pretty much doing exactly what I want to do. Mm-hmm. But the day-to-day writing of a novel can be awfully frustrating. You spend so much time looking at the same words and fretting about these characters that by the time you're done with it, if most writers were being honest, they would say they don't see a whole lot redeeming in what they've just created. So I was happy to be done with Shotgun Love Songs and to move on to something else. So I completely understand that sentiment.
You've obviously found an agent, have won a number of awards. This isn't the only one you have won, and you're on the docket, according to your webpage anyway, for some others perhaps. So how did you go about finding an agent?
Well, during the years of, 2010 through 2012, I was a student at the Iowa Writers' Workshop. Literary agents actually come to Iowa City to sort of recruit new clients. And so while I was there, I met with, I don't know, maybe like half dozen literary agents, and I just struck out real badly with every one of them. I tell people a bit like going on a bad blind date. So the summer between my first and second year, I just said, you know what, I'm not going to worry about getting an agent. The only thing that I can really control is writing these short stories, working on this novel, and making sure that my writing is as good as it can be. And it was during that summer that I published three short stories in big journals, and agents started calling me. My agent, who I'm very fortunate to have, found me on the strength of one of my stories, and I decided to sign with him.
Yours is the first book that I've ever read that just does not use chapter numbers. Talk a little bit about your headings.
I was very conscious about what I was doing there, and basically the font is even important to me. I wanted each chapter to be like an invitation into a character's consciousness, and if you've read the book, you know that there's a lot of different weddings that happen over the course of the novel. And so each chapter heading is supposed to be a little bit like a wedding invitation. It's got the same sort of frilly font. And I thought it would be a little clunky to have the full character's name at the top of every chapter. I didn't like that. I just thought it was a little blunt. But I felt like there needed to be something at the top of every chapter so that people could identify which character they were hearing from. And the most elegant way, at least in my mind, that I could come up with that was just a simple letter.
Well, that's kind of interesting because I finally figured it out after the first chapter what you were doing, but it lent a bit of mystery to it.
It kept going. There's nothing wrong with making a reader work a little bit, too. I mean,
of course not.
You know.
You've been able to score quite a number of reviews, and one I particularly like is novelist Jonathan Evason. Wrote a review for the New York Times Sunday Book Review. And he said that sometime after Charles Dickens and before Jonathan Franzen, the heart on the shirt sleeve seems to have gone out of style in the literary world. But once in a while, it's nice to get your eyes wet and your heart beating rapidly in a nostalgic time. Talking about your book, of course. And I thought, that's interesting, because most of what you find on the bookshelves these days or in the library is, you know, shoot 'em up, gunsmoke, terrorist, spy novels and things of that sort. How difficult has it been to make a market for your style of writing?
The honest answer to that question is that I don't think about the market at all. I'm only capable of writing what I can write. I've been very fortunate that it has found a market, that it has found readers, but I don't think you can fake things in art effectively. Yeah. I think people know when you're faking things. Look, I just wrote the book that I wanted to read myself. I care about friendship. I care about Wisconsin. I care about marriage and love, and I think those are themes that are important to explore, and that's what I set out to do. And I never had any notion that the book would even be published. You'd be crazy to assume that your book was going to be picked up in the manner that mine was. So I just worried about writing the best book that I could. I worried about writing a book that I would want to read, and I'm really thankful for everything that's happened after that.
He is Nicholas Butler, who is author of Shotgun Love Songs and Beneath the Bonfire. Well, Shotgun Love Songs scored 3 reviews that I found anyway in the New York Times, plus 1 in Ottawa and in Toronto. How do you get reviewed in all those places?
I really don't know. I think there's so little space for book reviews in today's magazine and newspaper world that for the most part, people want to publish positive reviews. They don't want to waste space on, you know, trashing somebody's book. And it's one of the wonderful things about living far away from New York or Los Angeles is that these things happen in major markets. And I don't understand how it works. I just trust the people that are working behind the scenes on my book, and I hope for the best.
In your letter to the reader, web surfer, on your web page, you talk about spending a lot of your time traveling, about promoting your book. Now, books, of course. Is all that travel booked by your publisher, or now that you've achieved a level of success, do you get invited to places?
I get invited to places, I just go where people invite me, and I've been very fortunate that the book has found an audience abroad. And this calendar year, I've spent some time in France and Italy and feel very fortunate to go to those places and to meet new friends. And it's very mysterious to me how the book has found a readership abroad. I thought I was writing a book about Wisconsin and winter and the Green Bay Packers, and I don't know how that quite resonates in northern Italy, but I'm happy that it does.
This is a question I usually ask everybody. Aside from the one character inspired by Justin Vernon, are any of the other characters anybody you know based on anybody you know?
Not really. I think the honest answer to that question is that every one of the characters has a little bit of me in them. The Leland character, which was inspired certainly a bit by Justin Vernon, for one thing, I don't know anything about making music. So that character, when you're reading about the isolation of making art and nervousness about being a failure, you know, that's just me. Me in the midst of writing this novel and not knowing what was going to happen and worrying that I was going to have to go back to the string of crappy jobs that I'd had before. And the female character, Beth, one of the lead female characters in the book, she's a housewife. Her responsibilities are, you know, sort of taking care of the household and the kids. And that's me too. I'm mostly a stay-at-home dad. So I think the honest answer to your question is that there's more of me in these characters than there is other real-life people walking around in Eau Claire.
You live on, what, 15 acres of land and next door to a buffalo ranch?
It's amazing. The first time I came on the property and I looked across the barbed wire fence and saw these beautiful animals, to me, like, buffalo are this emblem or this spirit of America. That's what covered this country at one point in our history. And to be able to live next to them has been rewarding in ways that I'm not eloquent enough to explain. I like to watch them running. I like to see them in all seasons, when they're out in the bitter cold or on a really hot day, just kind of flopping around in the dust. And I like to imagine what it was like, you know, 500 years ago. I'm a romantic, so of course I'm attracted to that sort of thing.
I'm going to insert some other information here regarding awards, because the Literary Awards Committee of the Wisconsin Library Association also honored another Eau Claire author this year. They selected 10 books by Wisconsin authors for Outstanding Achievement. Those titles were also published in 2014 and included The Heart of Things, a Midwestern Almanac written by Eau Claire author John Hildebrand, designated as one of this year's notable Wisconsin authors. This award recognizes an author's entire body of work and is designed to promote greater awareness of the state's literary heritage. Wow, you're in pretty tough company there. And you finished above all of that. Professor Hildebrand appeared on this program last fall in advance of the Chippewa Valley Book Festival, where he was one of the presenters. Getting back to you, what do you have coming up next?
I'm working real hard every day to finish up my second novel. I'm hoping to maybe have enough of that done or have the whole thing completed to sell this fall. I don't know when it would be. Hopefully it will sell, and then I don't know when it would be published after that. But just keeping myself really busy working on that. It's been fun. The last couple weeks have been really rewarding. I've been working hard on it. The novel has just kind of revealed itself in unexpected ways. There's a lot more about baseball in the book than I would have ever guessed, and baseball cards and supper clubs. And when I stand back and look at it, I think, yeah, that's what I would want to read. You know, it's this crazy, crazy book about fathers and sons and baseball in America over, you know, 70 years of history.
And where are your books available?
Should be available pretty much everywhere, but I give a special shout-out to the local store, my friends at Volume 1, also available at BAM here in town, but, I mean, you could find them anywhere, the big jungle and anywhere else you need to go.
Well, we've been talking to Nicholas Butler, who is author of Shotgun Love Songs and Beneath the Bonfire. He is the 2015 winner of the Literary Award for the highest literary achievement by a Wisconsin author for a work written in 2014 for Shotgun Love Songs. Thanks so much for being here.
It's been my pleasure. Nice to meet you, Jim.
Jim Oliver, always an interesting interview perspective from one who loves to read and knows good stuff when he sees it. Yet to come on Spectrum West, the band Cranford Hollow returns to lead guy John Cranford's hometown. But first, the Eau Claire Municipal Band 2015 Summer Concert Series presents the final Wednesday concert of the summer, next Wednesday the 29th, in the historic Donald Sarge Boyd Band Shell in beautiful Owen Park. That gets underway at 7:30 p.m. Tuesday Night Blues, same park. Next Tuesday, July 28th, it's the Kingsnakes. The UW Eau Claire Summer Cinema Series features Wednesday evening movies, on the West Lawn of the Haas Fine Arts Center next Wednesday, July 29th. See The Avengers. It's Local Heroes Night. Gets underway about 8 o'clock and the film starts at dark, and dark is getting earlier. Thursday evenings, Tower Park in Colfax, the site of music performances. Tonight, July 23rd, it's Rick Schrader from Menominee on acoustic guitar. There's also a brat sale. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks for joining us. August 6th, 7th, and 8th, Memorial Park in Arcadia will again host Ashley for the Arts, sponsored by the Community Involvement Wing of the people affiliated with Ashley Furniture, a rather large West Wisconsin employer. Those festival folks aren't shy about who they ask to entertain. Last year, the Beach Boys drew tens of thousands. This year's headliners include Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Denver rockers The Fray, and country guy Easton Corbin, plus a much larger lineup of people to hear, things to do, eat, drink, art, and the beautiful park to enjoy. For a preview, we contacted Ashley Information Specialist Jason Lockington.
Ashley for the Arts really started as a community event, an opportunity to kind of bring some music to this beautiful park, Memorial Park in Arcadia. We had about 300 people. It kind of grew from there.
Did it become the Ashley for the Arts Festival after that, or was it was that the first Ashley for the Arts?
It became Ashley for the Arts after that. The folks that set it up ran out of money, and they asked Ashley to step up. They wanted Ashley to take it over, and it became a charity event and a really big one.
Now, that wonderful location that you alluded to is Memorial Park.
Back in 1989, the city acquired some land and asked for Ron Wanick, who's the founder of Ashley, to assist in the development of that. Through his ideas, he said, you know what, I think we should call it Memorial Park. It's used to promote patriotism. Ron designed the walk and hand-sculpted a lot of the monuments along the walk.
How cool is that?
Pretty cool. You know, he grew up on a small farm in Minnesota. His teachers were a lot of World War II vets. Many people call them the greatest generation. And they were very big, influential people in his life. So that's really kind of where his patriotism came from. You know, Ron and now his son Todd, who has run the company since 2002, it's all about making people happy and in their home. This park and the community contributions that they've made, I think, are a big example of what that means in the community. So, it's absolutely, he enjoys seeing smiles on faces, multiple generations, and he's a very proud man. He's very proud of Arcadia and the contributions that his company has made to it, of course. But there's so many people that are part of any company's history, any community's history, and I think that's really what this is all about. You know, it's only $5, of course, for 3 days. You know, we have 12 different schools that benefit from this, and 1,200 volunteer slots that need to be filled, and that's one of the ways the schools can take advantage of the fundraising opportunities affiliated with this event.
Let's expound on that fundraising aspect of Ashley for the Arts a little more. All of the funds are spread around educational opportunities, and do those opportunities reflect the arts?
The arts are a big part of this. You know, there's a lot of, obviously, opportunities here for different departments to benefit from this, but music programs and the bands and, you know, the fundraising of efforts that those different organizations have throughout the year, a reflection of what they need. They want to lift those departments up. And we've obviously reached out to some of the local schools, and we've had a lot more schools reach out to us. Absolutely, it's a great opportunity for those programs to fundraise. This partnership with the schools has just been phenomenal. It's not just about the schools, of course. Over 20 different charities that benefit from this event.
Jason Lockington, he is with Ashley, and this is Ashley for the Arts time of the year. Well, almost. August 6th, 7th, and 8th at Memorial Park in Arcadia. It always appears to me like every year your musical lineup gets more diverse. I mean, you have indie rock, you have country, you have classical, you have some iconic entertainers. Tell our audience the process that you use to come up with entertainers and then what it takes to secure their services. Well, then we'll kind of let the cat out of the bag as to who's coming.
Sure. Well, you know, we do some polling. And we ask folks who they would like to see, who they haven't maybe seen in a long time or they've never seen and always wanted to see. A lot of times it comes down to who's able to come. Yeah, you know, the scheduling artists, especially our headliners, incredibly difficult. They're very busy. And as you know, the summer months in the north side of this country are known for their music festivals. And so there's a lot of competition out there nationwide. We put a lot of time into it, don't get me wrong, but more often than not, it comes down to who's available from our target list of family-friendly entertainment and those entertainers that we feel will be an interest to not just one demographic, but multiple demographics. So we're looking for that as well.
Yeah, and it appears as if as long as the entertainer is alive, the chance of them, because you've gotten some biggies. You had the Beach Boys last year, and this year, The Fray, been around a while, and Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to, when they hear that Frankie Valli is coming, well, yeah, I kind of knew he was still around, but the Four Seasons, too? Wow.
Yeah, you know, we're very fortunate. It's very hard to top the Beach Boys. They put on a 110-minute show last year. We asked that they play longer, and they said, absolutely. Of course, they had enough hits to fill in the entire span. And the crowd that showed up for last year's event was just absolutely phenomenal, and that sort of triggered some changes to the event. It was just a really special time for us and those who came. I had a wonderful time. We were very worried about this. Arcadia is 2,900 people on any day of the week, and when 20,000 people show up and they all want to eat at the same time, it becomes a bit of a challenge.
Oh,
so
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really triggered a lot of changes. We reflected on last year's event, and we feel that we are ready.
You have kind of a new setup, a new arrangement.
Yes, Ashley for the Arts typically has two stages. One is in a covered area, the pavilion. And another one is an outdoor, we call it the Millennium Amphitheater. This year we've added a new main stage. The amphitheater was always our main stage. We're calling it the South Field, south of the pavilion. And it will require that folks bring your lawn chairs, get there early. That's the new main stage, and that's where we're going to have our headliners. So Frankie Valli and The Fray, Easton Corbin, who's an up-and-coming country star, and Sean Hayes as well. So we're really, really looking forward to that new area. We feel that everyone's going to be able to see the stage. We also more than quadrupled the number of food vendors that we have this year. And everyone who is back from last year is going to double, triple, quadruple their capacity. Between that and the beverage stands, we are absolutely, we feel like very, very ready to execute and make people's experiences much more positive.
The amphitheater is a wonderful place to watch a show, but it just didn't seat enough. So now you can accommodate these throngs of people that are going to show up for your big headliners.
Exactly. We're still going to use the amphitheater.
Sure.
We have school performances there. We also have some very, very talented artists, including Cloud Cult. we didn't realize how big of a following they had. When they came, basically last year, there for the first time at this event, we had lost our headliner, Ingrid Michelson, who was tending to her mother. She had to bow out. But Cloud Cult stepped in, and they got a ton of fans after that performance. They're just phenomenal. They travel the world. They actually perform art while they're on the stage. It's just a really neat band, so I highly recommend people to check them out before Frankie Valli on Friday, August 7th.
Ashley for the Arts is August 6th, 7th, and 8th, Memorial Park in Arcadia. Jason Lockington, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Here's a notice. Cloud Cult, the band of which Jason spoke, will be on next week's program. We'll have some music and talk with founder Craig Minwa. Hope to see you at Ashley for the Arts in a couple weeks. The Big River Radio Wave records a live show Saturday, August 8th at 11:30 a.m. It'll be played back on Labor Day weekend. The website is ashleyforthearts.com for all you need to know. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Nice of you to join us. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Well, Jim Oliver's back to scan our big neighborhood for theatrical events. Let's see what's shaking.
A taste of live amateur and professional theater around the region finds that the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond will stage Cinderella through Saturday. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage West Side Story through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Noel Coward's Blithe Spirit will be performed through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. And the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona will stage Romeo and Juliet this evening, Thursday, and Saturday afternoon. The Glass Menagerie, Friday afternoon, Saturday evening, and Wednesday afternoon. And Much Ado About Nothing, Friday evening, Sunday afternoon, and Wednesday evening. And that's the theater scene around here this weekend and beyond. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Spectrum Memo, the exhibit Photography in Pastels, is up through August 31st at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory, and Saturday at 7:30, there's a young performer's concert featuring Maggie Christensen. Summer Sound Series at UW Eau Claire is Sundays at 2 p.m. in the Haas Fine Arts Center. This Sunday, July 26th, hear Alex Widstrand on bassoon. Fall, John Cranford and his band Cranford Hollow traveled west from South Carolina to perform at a theater called The State in the town where he grew up, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We talked with him then about how he landed below the Mason-Dixon line and the beginning of the band. Well, now he's back prior to another Eau Claire appearance. The band is on an 8,500-mile cross-country tour. They're preparing to release their fourth album in August. And we caught up with him, having coffee in Denver, Colorado, with his booking agent.
We started in Roanoke, Virginia on the 17th of June and sort of crisscrossed our way across the south over into New Mexico and did a Albuquerque and Taos show after some shows in Arkansas and Tennessee and Kansas. And then made our way up into Colorado and spent the 4th of July weekend in Telluride. That's sort of our little home away from home out here. We'll play like a big club show with 500 kids or more, and then we're playing something at the base of the mountain, acoustic set for 100 people eating lunch.
Wow.
For us, you know, when we're on the road, we're just, you know, we're trying to make a buck and pay the bills. We just try to play as much as possible. We got six guys on the crew, four in the band, a lighting technician, and a tour manager.
So do you look impressive rolling down the highway? What kind of an entourage do you have?
We travel in a 12-passenger van.
All right.
And we pull a 17-foot trailer.
So do you switch off driving, or do you have a road dog driver, or what do you have?
We sort of have three road dogs, our tour manager, Andrew, our bass player, Phil, and our drummer, Randy. They're sort of well-equipped for handling that thing and parking it and backing it up, mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff.
So how long are you out?
We're out this time for 7 weeks. You know, and originally we hadn't anticipated any of these Wisconsin shows, and we ended up with an Eau Claire and Madison show, so we were very excited about that.
How long does it take you to put a tour together? I mean, you guys sit around and say, yeah, we'll do that, or do you just take everything that comes along and try to make it geographically make sense?
It always seems like literally the day after we get home, we start discussing the next tour, venues we want to come back to, and almost immediately start to piece together the next adventure. You know, and being an independent, unsigned, small-time band from South Carolina, it does take, you know, quite a bit longer for us to string together enough dates with a decent enough payday, you know, for it to make sense for us to get out there. But, you know, it's hard now. It's like you have Facebook and you have Instagram and you have all this social media and you can reach all these fans. But if they haven't seen you play, they can listen to your stuff or they can watch your music video online. But, you know, I think our biggest goal is just to play in front of as many people as possible and in as many places as we can go.
Well, you use the term small-time band. I got to tell you, you may be a small-time band, but you've got a big-time sound. I'm a fan. I like it a lot.
Well, thank you. We have a lot of help doing these records. This St. Telluride thing is going to be our fourth record. You know, we started it out in Hastings Mesa outside of Telluride, Colorado, early January, and laid down sort of a foundation, really found a sound, and this beautiful room with some just fantastic acoustics sort of laid the groundwork for where we wanted to head. You know, I think we get caught up in the moment once in a while in the studio where we sort of get bullheaded on an idea and that sort of sticks. And this time it was much more open-ended and sort of left open for some discussion both between the band, the engineer, our producer, Jimmy DeVito, down in St. Augustine, Florida, where we ended up finishing the record. And that big sound we're trying to sort of expand on. You know, just the musicianship and the songwriting, I think, gets better as you get older. I hope we're learning something out here.
I'm holding in my hand a 3-page document that I carry with me in a folder, just to prove to people how wacky it is out there today. And on this 3-page folder, it lists all of the musical genres that there supposedly are out there. And interestingly enough, under the category of rock, I'm going to read a few. There's Britpop, post-Britpop, dream pop, emo, grunge, post-grunge, indie pop, indie rock, industrial rock, post-rock, shoegazing, blues rock, Chinese rock, dark cabaret, desert rock, folk rock, garage rock, glam rock, hard rock, heavy metal. Under heavy metal, there's black metal, Christian metal, death metal, melodic death metal, technical death metal, progressive death metal. It's crazy. So, hey, John, I'm curious as to where do you guys fit on that list? I mean, is your sound, does it have a name?
People constantly ask us what we sound like, and the easiest response for us has continually been, we're American rock and roll with a fiddle.
Okay, I like it.
You know, that genre sort of covers a lot of ground. I don't know if we necessarily fit in one specific category, but I would like to think that we cover a lot of those. And, you know, there's a ton of Southern rock influence in what we do. You know, I'm not really a Southerner. I'm Eau Claire born and raised and very proud of that. But the South is very close to our hearts and the music of the South. And there's this other whole Appalachian bluegrassy thing that Eric's into, our fiddle player. You know, so I think we span sort of across this genre line, and being able to do that really makes being in this band interesting. What I like about this band is that there's three songwriters and there's four guys with a hugely diverse taste in music. That makes it a lot of fun to play every night because there's no set determined way to play. If we're in a rock club opening up for a heavier band, we'll play more heavier tunes. If we're at the base of Aspen Mountain playing to a, you know, Saturday, Sunday matinee afternoon crowd, you know, it might be much more mellow and focusing more on sort of this like Americana roots music.
Sure.
It's tentative on the crowd and where we are, and that makes it a lot of fun.
When you moved south, ended up in South Carolina, you must have felt pretty fortunate to have met the people you did when arriving, because, you know, these guys are pretty good musicians.
I got really lucky landing where I landed. I sort of didn't have a game plan. It's sort of in between jobs, and had been working up in Michigan on Mackinac Island as a sous chef at a hotel, and went to the south to just sort of relax for the winter and maybe grab some work. And in that time, there was a little bar on Hilton Head called Remy's that had live music every night of the week. And I just sort of noticed this mass amount of talent. And through that and sort of that scene and those guys, I met Randy Roccolato, who's our drummer now. And that was sort of the first step forward in Cranford Hollow. And then meeting Phil and Eric sort of simultaneously around the same time. You know, I just got really lucky playing with not only really talented guys, but they're good guys. That's a reason I hope for longevity with this band is because everybody's a really good guy. They're very talented musicians. You know, we all come from different places and different paths, but chemistry works really well, and we really enjoy playing with each other.
Three songs that you were gracious enough to share from the upcoming album, St. Telluride, She Gone, Devil, and Breakdown. As I said earlier, I love them all, and I was especially happy you sent Devil, because that shows your ability to classically rock with the best of them. I love that song. Some of your diversity is born out in a song like Breakdown, because it features bagpipes and then jumps into a very marchy cadence. It almost feels hawkish and militaristic to me. What's it about?
Breakdown is a song that I wrote sort of coming home after an uncompleted college career. Sort of early on, that song's probably, man, 8 years old and just never quite got recorded with this band. I've done some different recordings with it with different people. I did a version in Eau Claire, actually, out of April Bay Studios. It was like the first time I ever recorded that song. And the song never really fit Cranford Hollow initially when we were sort of doing this rockabilly thing, and then sort of came to light during this recording process as just something that we could probably pull off now. We're getting a little bit older. We're slowing down a little bit. The song really always hits home for me because it's sort of about being stuck, this feeling of we're in the same place, not really moving forward, sort of trying to appreciate where we are, but at the same time maybe being a little bit resentful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a state that the band's in right now. We're playing all these tours and we're doing all this stuff, and we open for Philip Phillips and we play 200 shows a year, but it's hard out here, and it's hard to continually keep beating down the pavement without maybe some sort of major recognition, some sort of hype. And that's what I think, you know, the whole message of St. Telluride is like this new album. We've been in this place for this period of time, and we appreciate where we are, and we love Hilton Head, but we really want to expand. So Breakdown was like sort of a logical choice to put on this record, I think. The meaning of the song, plus sort of like this openness with the musicality, like you say, with the bagpipes.
And I'm back home on the front funds, and I'm waiting for some leads. I'm on a breaker from the dailies, need some smoke to call my creed. And I'm a little lost leverage, I got nothing nor needs. Hey, I'm right back down in this town, need some right back where I bleed.
this town. It's my last known plea, 'cause I'm strapped on the last ditch. I'm gonna soak in loosely speeds. So wake up when I speak up and listen for the keys. Just to watch this city's dirt gone, and I just hope that you believe. You never had another moment, I would have stopped back in the seats. I'll maybe break down the big sound and just listen to it breathe. Break down, breaking down the big sound.
You guys are good, and you know this. I mean, you're going to be at the right place at the right time. And if I were a record producer and I saw you play, I'd go, "Oh, here's a little deal. Why don't you sign this for me right there?"
Well, we sure appreciate that, Alan. Telluride has really become a home away from home for us. There's an awful lot of music festivals happening out there in the summertime. We have the potential, hopefully, to do some big things out there in the next few years.
John Cranford, Cranford Hollow, thanks for yakking with us.
Hey, Alan, anytime. We really appreciate the call, and we hope to see you in Eau Claire.
And I watch it all unravel. It's the aim to kill the saint.
Cranford Hollow passing through Eau Claire and playing at an iconic music hole in the wall, the Mousetrap, downtown Tuesday night, July 28th. The website is cranfordhollowmusic.com. You can also find some YouTube videos if you want to get a visual on them. Oh, yeah. Thanks to C.A. Jacoby for writing Shotgun each week, Debbie Brown for being more colorful than her name, Dean Kallenbach for looking good in the captain's hat, and to you, the audience, we need for keeping the WPR brass happy. Next week, Cloud Cult, the band, sculpting with chainsaws, Blues Along the River, the Swampers come out of the muck for an annual visit, and more, always more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thanks again. See you around.